If I'd have run faster, I'd have got here before the applause ended. I am pleased to be here. I'm pleased to be here with you. I did see they were cooking food outside, and I get the message of that, too. Don, thanks for your introduction. 100 years next spring of MFA, and as I thought about that, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I'm a historian and a farm boy, and I thought about how much of the history of our state is reflected in that 100 years, how people who brought MFA together 100 years ago this spring were thinking about what needed to happen, what they would have anticipated, and what the world is like today compared to what they would have anticipated. The one thing, as the governor was finishing talking about the state fair and the importance of the state fair, that there is no arguing about is that Americans generally are just not nearly as connected to agriculture as they were 100 years ago, or as they were 50 years ago when I was a boy. You know, my mom and dad were dairy farmers. All my uncles, with one exception, were dairy farmers. My aunts were involved in everything that happened on the farm. I don't know that I knew anybody growing up that, of course, I grew up in a farm community, so everybody I knew there would have clearly understood agriculture. But that's just not the case anymore. And so the things that we used to do pretty easily are harder to do. The Secretary of Agriculture, Secretary Vilsack, got in some trouble a year ago by saying the problem with the farm bill are there just aren't enough farmers anymore. But what he was trying to say was that the people that used to understand exactly what it took to be the engine of driving the world's food needs like we are don't have that connection. There is a disconnected as to how important this is. There is a lack of understanding of how important it is. And certainly one of the things that MFA does is continue to help create that sense of why agriculture matters, why agriculture research matters, why we need to have good agricultural policies as well as good policies that encourage all the other things that you're involved in and that our state is so involved in. Now, you know, the farm bill is up right now in Washington, and we need to pass it. We should pass it, and I believe we will pass it by the end of the year, but it's not as easy as it used to be. Now, and also it's less about farm families than it used to be. When I, just a few years ago, two-thirds of the farm program was the feeding programs, the nutrition programs, and now it's 80%, which means that only 20% is left for those things that a few years ago would have been the farm bill. Insurance, the kinds of things that allow you to go to the banker if you're a farmer and make a loan for this year's what you want to do this year. And you say, well, here's how we can pay that back, because if everything goes bad, here's the underpinning that we have with crop insurance and other things. If you don't have that, the banker is not as courageous as most farmers are. The banker is not nearly as prepared to take the kind of risk that farmers are prepared to take or deal with the uncertainty that farmers are prepared to deal with. And that's part of what, of course, the farm bill does. In a lot of our state, the livestock part of the farm bill is important. And for whatever reason, the disaster, livestock disaster programs ended in 2011. And we need to extend those and look back as we extend those and see what needs to be done there. But there are other things that need to be done, too. And they need to be on time, and they need to be done in the right way. And that is clearly something that for the last 5 years or so, Washington has failed to be able to do. Too many people have decided, if I don't get exactly what I want, I just as soon not have anything. And, of course, that's not the way democracy works. It's not the way the Congress should work. And a lot of not doing anything is we don't even bring the bills to the floor. You know, we're in this big fight right now, as we should be, about spending. And there's something, a word you hear when you hear about this spending fight called the CR or the continuing resolution. And what does that mean? What that means is the government refuses to figure out how to spend the money the way it should be spent this year. And so they say, well, we'll just spend it the way we spent it last year. We'll continue to spend like we spent last year. And for about 6 years now, the regular process just hasn't worked. And you and I'm frustrated by it, and you and I should insist that it work. There's something called the Budget Control Act that I'm for. that over the next 10 years, the next 8 years plus the last two, will save $1.2 trillion if we don't give up on it. And that's the big fight between now and the end of the year. And how much is $1.2 trillion? The problem with these numbers is, who really knows? You know, when President Reagan was inaugurated in January of 1981, we were about to owe $1 trillion for the first time. And here's the example he gave. He said if you had a stack of $1,000 bills 4 inches high, you'd have $1 million. But if you had a stack of $1,000 bills 67 miles high, you'd have $1 trillion. And so if I can be part of something that saves $1.2 trillion, I'm going to do that. And that means the Budget Control Act, sometimes called the sequester, needs to stay in place until we figure out how to save at least that much money somewhere else in the federal budget. And you ought to insist on that. I ought to insist on it. That's the kind of thing that should be done. We ought to be fighting regulations that impact families. Bad energy policies. You know, who do people think pay these utility bills if they double? We were in a debate on the budget this year, the first time the Senate had actually passed a budget, the Senate that I'm in the minority in, but the first time we'd passed a budget in 5 years, and part of the debate was I had an amendment that said we won't allow a carbon tax. We won't allow your utility bill to be taxed in a way that might double your utility bill. One of my friends from Rhode Island stood up and said, But the Pope cares about the environment. The new Pope cares about the environment. And I said, well, you know, I'm always reluctant even to debate members of the Senate. Now you've got me debating the Pope. And I said, I must have missed all the discussions the new Pope had about the environment, but I heard all the discussions the new Pope had about poor people. And who do you think are the last people to get the energy-efficient refrigerator? And who do you think are the last people to get better windows? And who do you think are the last people to get more insulation? People that can't pay their utility bill now are the people most hurt if you double the utility bill. You know, I've lived in a house, and some of you have too, where you approach winter and you wonder, okay, which of the rooms of this house can we not use this winter so we don't have to heat them? That's what happens when you have bad energy policies. On the other hand, good energy policies, if there was ever a simpler economic formula than more American energy equals more American jobs, I don't know what it would be. And not just the jobs to create the energy, but the jobs that happen when you have the utility bill is pretty reliable, you know the delivery system is in place, and we can be virtually energy independent in North America if we want to. Now, there's nothing wrong with buying things from people who don't like you. I work at a place where our approval rating is 9%. So I'm pretty sure that I occasionally buy things from people who don't like me very well, or at least don't like what I do. But while there's nothing wrong with buying things from people who don't like you, it is crazy to have to buy things from people who don't like you. You know, if we can produce our own oil, if we can produce our own natural gas, if we can produce our own renewable fuel, that's exactly what we should do. And if we can't produce it and can buy it from our best trading partners and our nearest neighbors, that's the next thing we should do. You know, if there was ever a no-brainer, it's the Keystone Pipeline. Why wouldn't that oil is going to be sold? The Canadian oil is going to be sold. It's right at our border. It's either going to be sold to the Chinese or to us. That pipeline is either going to come south or go west. We should want it to come south. When we give the Canadians a dollar, they give us back about a dollar every single time because they're our best trading partners. That's not the case for people in the Middle East. Our economy benefits from doing smart things. Our economy benefits from regulation that makes sense. And let me just say this. We have tremendous opportunities in front of us. American energy is one of them. Agriculture is another one. The world food needs are going to go up by about 70% by 2050. and doubled not long after that. And it's not just population growth, though that's a lot of it, but it's also once people get the better food, they don't want the bad food again. You know, when you and I were growing up, most of us were growing up, certainly I was growing up, Americans had better than an average shot. We had a really good shot at the T-bone steak. But now everybody wants the T-bone steak. And why wouldn't they? Particularly if we can raise it for them. World food needs are going to go up by 70%, and we are going to be a big part of meeting those world food needs. Science is going to be a big part of meeting those food needs. I had a lot of criticism earlier this year. The appropriating committee that I'm the leading Republican on is the Ag FDA appropriating committee. And in making a compromise with the House where we got more ag research, we just accepted the proposal they had that if you'd planted a crop that was legal to plant, you should be allowed, if the Secretary of Agriculture agreed, to harvest that crop, no matter what some crazy federal judge might say. And of course, the people on the other side that always want to talk about GMOs immediately labeled it the Monsanto Protection Act. Well, Monsanto didn't have anything to lose. They'd already sold you the seeds. It was the Farm Family Protection Act. If the government tells you you can plant a crop, you should be allowed to harvest and sell that crop, particularly if the Secretary of Agriculture says it's okay. And in more than one case in the last few years, some federal judge comes in and says, no, I don't think there have been enough studies done yet. You can't harvest and sell that crop. They've always been reversed by some higher federal judge that says, you really don't know what you're talking about. But, of course, if it takes a year to reverse them, what do you do with the crop? If you're the northern farmer that raised those sugar beets that were the example of one of those court cases, you know how you store sugar beets in North Dakota and South Dakota and other places? You stack them outside the processing plant. As long as everything is frozen, which, by the way, in those states is generally a long time, as long as everything is frozen, that's pretty good storage for those sugar beets. But once the spring comes, that crop begins to rot away. And if you're told you can't store that crop, you can't sell that crop, we need to do things that make sense in the country today. Meeting world food needs, we don't appear to have a lot of this new energy, but we're really close to it. A lot of it comes through here. A lot of it gets shipped through here. Clearly, we are the transportation focus of the country. All you've got to do is look at a map to see that. We are a huge producer of agricultural products and agricultural research. How we maintain our infrastructure to get them somewhere, how we use the river in new ways that allows us to send, whether it's woody biomass from south central Missouri or somewhere else in Missouri, or ag products processed and raw, these can be great days for America and they can be great days for Missouri. I actually think the second century of the Missouri Farmers Association is going to be a bigger century than the first century. I am optimistic about the future, but only if the government gets out of the way and gets involved only when it has to, and the decisions made in Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City make common sense. The common sense standard is pretty big right here at this meeting. You and I ought to insist it's equally big in Washington. I am glad to get to work for you. I'm glad to be with you today. I am optimistic about the next 100 years for Missourians and MFA. Thank you all.